Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by Proliance Energy. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.
The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today we present author Marshall Goldsmith.
You know, some Hoosiers like to boast that when they can that the state's been significant contributors to the development of individuals who have gone on to fame and fortune. For example, a lot of people talk about how Abraham Lincoln's years in Kentucky and Illinois were really a benefit of his youth, which he spent in Indiana, and what framed his lifelong values. Today's speaker offers some of those Hoosiers another opportunity for bragging, because Marshall Goldsmith has degrees from Rose Holman and from the Kelly School of Business at IU. And he also is a Hoosier that's written the number one selling leadership book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Dr. Goldsmith's a world authority in helping successful leaders get even better by achieving positive, lasting change in behavior. He's been recognized as one of the 15 most influential business thinkers in the world by the London Times and Forbes magazine, and The Economist magazine has ranked him as one of the top CEO coaches in America. He's one of the few executive advisors that's been asked to work on more than 120 major CEOs and their management teams. Currently, Dr. Goldsmith teaches education at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. Today, however, we are delighted to welcome him back to his Indiana roots. Just talking with him here at lunch, I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll briefly introduce myself and we will begin. My name is Marshall. I'm from Valley Station, Kentucky. As was said, went to undergraduate school at Rose. I have a couple of classmates of mine out here in the audience. Always great to see old friends. And then met my wife at IU. She's from Kokomo. Then after that, got a PhD at UCLA. I was college professor and dean when I was very young. And then for 35 years, I do three things. One is, like today, I give talks or teach classes. This is what I love to do the most. This is a fun part of my job. Then the second thing I do, which I'm most famous for, is I coach executives. And my coaching clients are typically CEOs or could be CEOs of huge companies, people like the CEO of Ford, CEO of Glaxo, CEO of Pfizer, President of World Bank, lots of really interesting people. Then I write and edit books and articles. So, great job. The only hard part of my job is I do travel constantly. On American Airlines alone, I do have over 10 million frequent flyer miles. Have any of you seen the movie Up in the Air? I have the card. And by the way, this always happens to me, especially with women. I show them the card, and they always say the same thing. You look just like George Clooney. Now, what are we going to be doing today? Well, my whole focus is on helping successful leaders get even better. So this is not the How Do You Fix Losers program. This is taking people who are very successful, and I try to help you get better. If you look, by the way, I love getting emails. My email address and my website, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. Send me an email. I can't get back to you immediately, but I always get back to people eventually. And if you go to my website, www.marshallgoldsmith.com, I give everything away. So you can copy, share, download, duplicate, use any of my materials anytime you want to. I've done extensive research that indicates we're all going to be equally dead. So we might as well do some good here, right? So if any of this stuff does good for anybody, please feel free. Now, I had the privilege, before he died, of spending 50 days with Peter Drucker, the world's greatest authority on management. Peter Drucker said, we spend a lot of time helping leaders learn what to do. We do not spend enough time helping leaders learn what to stop. That one comment led to my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And that's the first thing we're going to talk about today, how to use what to stop in leadership development coaching. Now, number two, we're going to practice something called feed forward. This is going to be not so stuffy as your normal presentation. You're actually going to be doing stuff and talking to each other, because everything I teach, I'd like you to look at not as graduate school, but as trade school. My job is not to help you learn. My job is to help you do. I would rather you leave our little time together with one simple idea that you execute than a laundry list of clever thoughts that you go, that was interesting, that was interesting. In the real world, nothing changes. And then I want to teach a proven model you can use to develop yourself as a leader and coach others. And I think all of you have the article I wrote called Leadership is a Contact Sport. That's a research study with 86,000 participants. I'm going to talk about what we learned in our research. And we're going to begin right now. One of the reasons to come here is to meet new people. Yet I notice you all tend to sit with people you know. That is now going to stop. You're going to quit eating. None of us, we can all lose a pound or two. You're now going to quit eating. You're going to stand up. You've got 20 seconds. Find one person you don't know. You're going to sit next to that person. One person you don't know. To your marks, stand up. Find one person you don't know. Sit next to that person. Go, go, go. You too. We are going to practice peer coaching. In peer coaching, you are not here to judge your partner. You are not here to critique your partner. You're not here to put your partner down. You're here to help your partner. I want you to shake hands with your partner and say, "Partner, my name is, I'm here to help." Go, shake hands with your partner. Go, 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 go. Okay, stop. Stop. I was interviewed in the Harvard Business Review and asked a question. What is the number one problem of all of those successful people you work with? What is the number one problem? And yes, I sense the problem in this room. Yes, I feel some of you may be afflicted with this very disease. Perhaps even some sitting at the esteemed front table. What was my answer? Winning too much. What does this mean? If it is important, we want to win. Meaningful, we want to win. Critical, we want to win. Trivial, we want to win. Not worth it, we want to win anyway. Winners love winning. Now, in the game of life, everyone sitting around here, you're all winners in the game of life. It's hard for winners not to constantly win. I'm going to give you a case study about winning too much that almost all of my clients fail. Almost all of you will fail this case study. And when I say fail, you will fail yourself. You will say, what I did do is the opposite of what I know I should have done. Here is the case study. You want to go to dinner at restaurant X. Your husband, wife, partner, friend, or significant other wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. You have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. It was not your choice. The food tastes awful. The service is terrible. Option A, critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided had only you listened to me, me, me. Option B, shut up. Eat the stupid food, try to enjoy it, and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? Almost all my clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. How many people in the room, please raise their hands, have ever critiqued the food before? Raise your hands. Yes. A room filled with food critiquers. Now I have a question. Was this smart or stupid? Stupid. It was very stupid. Stupid. And as stupid as it was stupid. I'm going to give you all an example now that is so hideously stupid. It will make that one pale by comparison. And yes, half the people in the room have done this. Are you ready? You have a hard day at work, a hard day, under so much pressure, push, 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 numbers, numbers, numbers. You go home. Your husband, wife, or partner is there. The other person says, I had such a hard day today. I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. You had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up with today? Do you think you had a hard day? We are so competitive, we have to prove we are more miserable than the people we live with. I gave this example at a class at Dartmouth. A young man in the back raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him, what happened? He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you've had a hard day. It's not over. Next classic problem of smart, successful people, adding too much value. Now, I went to the fine Rose Holman Institute of Technology. Do we have any engineers in the room? Any engineers? Oh, look at all these engineers. Classic engineer disease, adding too much value. Now, what's that mean? I'm young, smart, enthusiastic. You're my boss. I come to you with an idea. You think it's a great idea. Rather than just saying great idea, our natural tendency is to say, that is a nice idea. Why don't you add this to it? The problem is the quality of the idea may go up 5%. My commitment to execute this idea may go down 50%. It's no longer my idea. Now it's yours. Very difficult for smart, successful people not to constantly go through life adding value. One of my good coaching clients retired about 5 years ago. His name, J.P. Garnier. J.P. was the CEO of a very large drug company, GlaxoSmithKline. Asked J.P., what'd you learn about leadership as the CEO of this big company? He said, I learned a very hard lesson. And every time you get promoted in life, this lesson will become more real for you. He said, my suggestions become orders. My suggestions become orders. He said, if they are smart, they are orders. If they are stupid, they are orders. If I want them to be orders, they are orders. If I do not want them to be orders, they're orders anyway. Every year I teach the new Admiral School for our fine United States Navy. Have any of you been in the U.S. Navy before? Thank you for your service. What's the first thing I teach those new admirals when you get that star? Your suggestions become orders. Do admirals make suggestions? No. That admiral makes a suggestion. What's the response? Sir, yes, sir. That suggestion is an order. I asked JP, what'd you learn from me when I was your executive coach? He said, you taught me one lesson, helped me be a better CEO and have a happier life. I said, what was that lesson? He said, before I speak, stop and breathe and ask myself one question. Is it worth it? And he said, as the CEO of this huge company, 50% of the time, if I had the discipline to stop and to breathe and to ask myself, is it worth it? What did I decide? Am I right? Maybe. Is it worth it? No. Okay, everyone look up here. I want everybody to take a deep breath. I want you to think back to the last time you got angry and got into a heated argument with someone you love when you had a need to win and prove they were wrong on a minor or insignificant point. Have any of us ever done that before? Was it worth it? How many people in the room, please raise your hand, have teenage children? Teenage children, yes. And have we ever attempted to prove that teenage child was wrong on a minor or insignificant point? How well did that work out for you? No. Win the big stuff. All that little stuff, just take a deep breath and let it go. Now, more good news about our little time together. Everything I teach you today doesn't just apply at work. It all applies at home. And the people at home are more important than the people at work. I got an email about a month ago that made my whole week. A gentleman said, I know you don't remember me. I was in your class at Dartmouth 5 years ago. I wanted to send you an email. He said, my wife called me up yesterday, and she talked about what a hard time she's having. And my first reaction was I was going to tell her, you think you've got problems? What about me? And he said, for some reason, I remembered that talk. And he said, I just listened to my wife and said, I love you. Thank you for all the sacrifices you've made for our family. I bought her some flowers for $25. He said it was the best $25 I ever spent. Well, next time you get in that need to prove we're right and prove how smart we are and prove that the other people are not quite as good as us, take that deep breath and say, wait a minute, who am I impressing here? Now I'm going to give you four words that are going to help you do a better job as a leader or coach at work and a better family member at home. What are these four words? Help more, judge less. Help more, judge less. How many of us have friends and family members, please raise their hands. It might be happy if we help just a little bit more and we judge just a tad less. You know, would any of them object to these changes, right? No. And what are the odds a year from today they're going to come back and say, you know, Doug, we miss the judgmental you. Very, very unlikely that's going to be happening to any of us. Now, you're going to talk to your fine partner. We're going to have a little contest. And by the way, first one that gets the right answer is going to win prizes. Are we ready? You're going to talk to your partner and answer this question. What percent of all interpersonal communication time is spent on A, people talking about how smart, special, or wonderful they are, or listening to somebody do that, plus B, people talking about how dumb, stupid, inept, or bad somebody else is, or listening to people do that? I want you to take A plus B divided by all interpersonal communication time and give me one percentage number. Zero is none. 100% is all. There's not a right answer. There's not somebody in the sky counting comments. We're all guessing. I have asked this question to tens of thousands of people from around the world. I'll tell you how your score compares with the average score in the whole world. To your marks, get set, talk to your partner 20 seconds. Give me one number between 0 and 100. Go. Come up with a number. Go. Okay, stop. Now, there is no right answer. We're all guessing here. All right, what guess did you come up with?
70%.
A 70. Now, do I have any Rose Holman engineers in the room? Do I have any Rose Holman electrical engineers? Oh, an electrical engineer. Uh-oh. I'm going to get into your unique problems later. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to write down all the numbers and give me the average score. a math minor. He's showing off now, right? So you got a pencil and paper. Write down all the numbers. Give me the average. And the first number is a 70. Okay, sir, give me a number. And an 80. We have a 70 and we have an 80. Sir? 80. Okay, ma'am. She's thinking.
75.
A 75. 74. They're just messing with you now, right? What do you think?
90.
A 90? Okay, anybody else? Yes. 75. A 75? Anything else? 55? Okay, write all those down. Now, there is no right answer. I've asked tens of thousands of people this question. The average answer in the whole world is right about 65%. Now, nobody knows what that number is. It's a big number. Oh, you got a 65. 66. And by the way, can you stand up? 66. You don't have an issue with winning too much, do you? By the way, did anybody get a 65? 65? Oh, 65, you two? Come up at the end. Let's hear it for our winner. Books for these two. Yeah, 65. Okay. Now, there is no right answer. What was the average in the room?
73 before you gave your answer.
73.
Yes.
Yeah, the average in the room, 73. Nobody knows what that number is. It's always a big number. It's always a big number. Now, how many of you, given pressures of work and home and new technology that follows you everywhere, and emails and voicemails and global competition, how many of you feel about as busy today and under as much pressure as we've felt our whole lives? Raise your hands. In most of this room. I'm now going to give you a productivity enhancement tool for yourself and for your teams. What is this tool? Reduce that number. Reduce that number. How much we learn talking about how smart, special, or wonderful we are? Nothing. How much we learn listening to people do that? Nothing. How much we learn talking about how dumb everybody else is? Nothing. And how much time is wasted on that, according to the world? About 65%. Reduce that number. Now, how do we reduce that number? I'm now going to give you a totally counterintuitive yet amazingly effective tool to help people change behavior. This is called using small amounts of money to create large changes in behavior. Tiny little amounts of money to create large changes. Totally counterintuitive. Let's guess, the three fine women sitting up here. Over the years, do you think most of the big famous executives I've coached in, you think they've been mostly women or men? What would you get? Men. They agree, mostly men. Mostly younger or a little bit older?
Older,
they're right again, a little older. Mostly the poor or the ridiculously rich? A bunch of rich old men. I was teaching one class, a woman raised her hand, she goes, any single ones? Right? Let's face it, they're mostly a bunch of rich old men. There's a common misperception about rich old men. What is that? Rich old men would not mind losing tiny little amounts of money. That would be wrong. Rich old men hate losing any money. Watch them play golf. They play golf for $5. They lie, they cheat, they swear at each other. They just hate losing. Now, it is amazing how well this technique works. And we're going to start with something called destructive comments. Those nasty comments about our colleagues. A very bad habit. How many of you work in a company that preaches the following sermon? We want to create an environment where people reach out across the company. Reach out. We want to build positive, synergistic, win-win relationships with our colleagues. Do we like those silos? No. We must tear down those bad silos. How many of you work in companies that preach this stuff? Now, what happens to all this corporate happy talk when we stab our coworkers in the back? This makes things better or worse. This is a bad, bad habit. Now, I don't want to look like I'm preaching at you. I also get feedback. And if you read my bio, all those fancy awards I won, none of those fancy awards came from my staff, and none of those awards came from my family. In fact, my daughter reads this one report, and she's 14. She goes, Wall Street Journal, top 10 consultant in the world. She said, Daddy, I want to be in your field. I said, Kelly, that makes Daddy proud. Why do you want to be in my field? She said, the standards are low. I'll never forget the first time I got feedback about myself from my own staff. One item was called avoids destructive comments about other people. What score did I make? 8th percentile. 8. 92% of the people in the world did better than me, and I wrote the test. I go back to my staff and said, staff, overall, I'm proud of my feedback. I feel good about this. There's something I want to do better. This business of not bum-wrapping people. I teach everybody else not to do that. I've been one of the worst offenders. I said, if you ever hear me make a bad comment about a personal group again, bring it to my attention. I'm going to pay you $10. I'm going to break this terrible habit. Then I gave them a pep talk because I thought they'd be embarrassed to ask for the money. Pep talk was not needed. They tricked me into making nasty comments so they could make $10. I no more give this dumb talk than one of our clients called. He said, we need this and this. I said, he wants something everyone pays cheap. $10. My partner Tim called. I said, that fool, how'd he get a PhD? He don't know anything. $10. By noon, I've lost $50 and refused to speak to anyone for the rest of the day. First day, it cost me $50. Second day, $30. Third day, $10. Does it still cost me money? Yes. What score did I make last time? 4.8 out of 5. What's this teach you? You spend a few $1,000, you get better. Now, how many people in this very room, either at work or home in the last month, have made at least one unnecessary comment about other people we could have left out? Let's all raise our hands. Now get out $1 and put it in the table in front of you right now. Everybody get out a dollar. Put it on that table in front of you. Get out a dollar. If you don't have a dollar, borrow it from your partner. If your partner doesn't have a dollar, borrow it from your neighbor. Everybody's got to get out a dollar now. Money, money. Come on, let's go. Let's get the money out there. Money, money, money. Okay, everybody get out money. Who knows a wonderful charity, a fine cause you'd like to raise some money for? People that need the money more than anybody in this room, we'd like to raise a little money for. Raise your hand. Who has a good cause? Oh, sir, what is it?
United Way.
United Way. Would you like, and do they, and by the way, can they use the money?
Absolutely.
And would that be good?
That'd be great.
Very good. Starting now, if anybody in the room makes another destructive comment about anybody else, you're all deputized to say $1. What if you say that wasn't destructive, you're confused? $2, $3, $4, until you shut up and say thank you. Now, I've used this little tool with my clients in coaching for years. How much money have I raised for nice causes playing these little games with my clients? Over $750,000. And it doesn't hurt anybody very much. It doesn't hurt anybody very much. It is amazing how well this works. Now, my clients are rich people. You think they might not. I fine them $20 for every cent. $20. They have so much money, if they drop $20 on the ground, it wouldn't be worth bending over to pick up. They'd rather die than lose $20. One guy went, $20. I said, this is expensive. I said, you made $35 million last year. This is $20 given to a little homeless child. Shut up. He said, you're right. I'm an ass. Take 50, right? Now, who is my favorite client in the world? I've met many wonderful leaders. One of the fun leaders I work with is a man named General Eric Shinseki. I don't know if you know General Shinseki, but General Shinseki got shot. Didn't have to go back into combat, but healed up and went back into combat again. Got his foot blown off, stayed with the U.S. Army, eventually became head of the U.S. Army, four-star general. He was a man that stood up to Donald Rumsfeld and said the Iraq War would take a lot of troops and cost money and was publicly crucified for telling the truth. Just a great guy. Now he is the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He reports to the President. So he's a great guy. One night when he was head of the Army, General Shinseki and I are having dinner together. We're surrounded by a bunch of generals. He said, Marshal, who is your favorite customer? I said, sir. My favorite customer, smart, dedicated, hardworking, driven to achieve, creative, entrepreneurial, cares about the company, cares about the customers, great values, high integrity, and gets results. And is a stubborn, opinionated know-it-all that never wants to be wrong. I said, sir, do you think any of the generals in this very room may fit such a description? He looks at me and goes, Marshal, we have a target-rich opportunity. Now let me ask you all a question. How many of the leaders in this very room are just a little bit stubborn or opinionated, please, Rick? Come on, a little stubborn or opinionated, yeah. Just a little bit, yes, yes. And if we're stubborn and opinionated at work, what are the odds we become excessively open-minded when we go home? No, this doesn't get any better. Now, this next thing is great for the stubborn of the world. Starting out, a $1 fine if you begin any sentence with three words, no, but, however. If you talk to me, the first word out of my mouth, no, what'd I just say? Shut up. Your butt. What does butt mean? Disregard everything you said. However, fancy word for butt. One of my clients is stubborn. I'm reviewing his feedback report. He said, butt Marshall. I said, that's free. If I ever talk to you again, you start a sentence with no but, however, I'm going to fine you $20. He said, but Marshall, 20. No, 40. No, 60, 80, 100. He lost $420 in an hour and a half. At the end of the hour and a half, he said, thank you. I had no idea. I did that 21 times with you throwing it in my face. How many times would I have done it had you not been throwing it in my face? 50, 100? He said, no wonder people think I'm stubborn. The first thing I do when somebody talks to me is I prove I know more than them or they're wrong over and over and over. This guy got so much better at being an open-minded listener just by learning this one very, very, very simple tool. Now, learning from a great leader. I'm going to share now probably my deepest learning as a coach. In my coaching, I don't get paid 1 cent if my clients don't get better. Better's not judged by me or my client. It's judged by everyone around my client. There's a simple way to test if someone actually believes what they're teaching you. You can ask one question and test their belief. You know what that simple question is? Do you want to bet on it? They say, I believe it, but I don't want to bet on it. You know what you just learned? They don't believe it. They say, here's the money. They believe it. I bet on this every time. When you get paid for results, you learn humility. The client I coached that I spent the most amount of time with did not improve at all, and I did not get paid. The client I coached that I spent the least amount of time with was great to start with, improved more than anybody ever coached. 200 people got better, and I did get paid. A humbling lesson. Back to my fine mathematical economics background at Rose, I did a chart. On one dimension, it was called time spent with Marshall Goldsmith. The other dimension was called improvement. There was a clear negative correlation between spending time with me and getting better. Now, I said, this is a troubling chart. So I go talk to my client who improved the most, who I spent the least amount of time with. His name is Alan Mulally. Alan Mulally was the CEO of the year in the United States last year, CEO of the Ford Motor Company, spectacular guy, did a great job of turning around Ford and did not take 1 cent of our United States government taxpayer dollars. So big round of applause for him. Big guy. I talked to Alan. I said, Alan, of all the people I've coached, I spent the least amount of time with you, and you improved the most. Then I showed him my chart. I said, Alan, the way this chart looks, had you never met me, you would really be good. So I asked Alan, what should I learn about coaching from you? He taught me two great lessons, which I'm going to share with you. He said, lesson number one, your biggest challenge as a coach is called customer selection. If you pick the right customer, your coaching process will always work. You pick the wrong customer, your coaching process will never work. And he said, my job is not that different. I don't build these cars. I don't design these cars. I don't sell these cars. I got to have great people. He said, two, never make the coaching process about yourself and your own ego and how smart you are. Make it about the great people you coach and how hard they work. He said, my job isn't that different. Every day I drive to the Ford Motor Company, I tell myself, leadership is not about me. Leadership is about them. For the great achiever, it's all about me. For that great leader, it's all about them. This is a very, very difficult transition in leadership. I want to do a little test with the group. Have any of you ever attempted to change the behavior of a successful adult that had absolutely no interest in changing? Many of you tried this before? Yeah. And how much luck did you have in these religious conversion activities? Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Is this an honest group of high ethics, character, and integrity? What do you think?
I would say so.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to test that right now. Okay. I'm going to ask a group a question, a troublesome question, a personal question. Yes, an embarrassing question. If the answer is yes, you must raise your hands. How many people in this very room are still stupidly attempting to change the behavior of a husband, wife, partner, or significant other who has no interest in changing? Come on, get these hands up. Raise your hands in the air. Yes, look at those hands. How many years have you been engaged in this futile partner-changing activity? Give me a number.
38
wasted years. And they let you sit in the front of the room, too. 38 years. Has anybody been doing this longer than 38 years? How many years?
40.
Can anyone top 40? How many?
42.
Can 42? Do I have a winner? Ma'am, back in the back. 58. Oh, 58. Can you stand up, please? Stand up. 58. 58 years. And what? Oh, there. 68 years. Now, look up here. I want you to take a deep breath and go like this. Go, ah. Let it go or let him go. Now, I'm going to teach you a great lesson about coaching. What is it? If they don't care, don't waste your time. You want people to get better, put your time and energy in with the people that do care. The ones that don't care, they're not going to get better anyway. Now, I'm going to teach you a great lesson about developing yourself as a leader. What is it? If you don't care, don't waste your time. You know what I've learned? I can't make you get better at what you don't want to change. I can't make my clients get better at what they don't want to change. Look who these people are. What am I going to do, beat them up or shoot them? I can't help you change what you don't want to change. I can help you change what you do want to change. That's good enough. I'm going to ask everybody in this room to pick one behavior to improve. Not 30, not 50, not 100. How many? Just one. That if you get better at that, it's going to make a positive difference in your life. And by the way, whatever you pick doesn't have to do with anything I've discussed so far. It needs to come from your heart. Because if it doesn't come from your heart, you won't do it anyway. For example, raise your hand. Who in the room is impatient? Please raise your hand. Impatient. See, he's so impatient, he was the first one to raise his hand on the impatience contest. Now, would your friends and family members be sad if you became more patient or happy?
No.
Happy is the right answer. They may be happy. Yeah. Who's a little stubborn or opinionated? Come on, raise your hands. Is anybody going to object if we drop just a little of that? Who's a little too judgmental? Yeah. And anybody going to complain if you drop a little of that? No. Anybody need to listen a little better? Who needs to listen? Now, let's take listening. You become a better listener. What happens to your scores on treating people with respect, up or down? Coaching. Customer satisfaction. Friend and family member. See, the way you get better at everything is don't try to change everything. None of us are going to change everything anyway. Let's just pick one thing and try to get better at that. You're now going to talk to your partner, and you're going to say, good partner, here's one behavioral change. If I get better at this, it's going to make a positive difference in my life. And good partner, here's why I believe it's going to make a difference. And the partner says, here's something I want to change, and here's why I believe it'll make a difference. To your marks, get set, talk to your partner, go. What do you want to change? Why does it matter? Go. Okay, stop. Now, we're going to practice something very quickly called feed forward. Now, how does feed forward work? We're going to have a little contest. You're going to talk to as many people as you can possibly talk to in 4 minutes. Here's how this contest is going to work. You're going to say, my name is, I want to get better at. And in feed forward, you're in two roles. Role number one is called, learn as much as I can. Are there smart people in this room? Yes or no?
Yes.
If you had a chance to learn from these smart people, would you like to do that?
Absolutely.
This is your chance. Role two is called help as much as I can. Are there nice people in this room? Yes or no? If you had a chance to help these nice people, would you like to help them? You're either learning, which is good, or you're helping, which is good. Therefore, it is all good. Now, what are the rules of feed forward? Rule number one is no feedback about the past. No feedback about the past. We spend too much time talking about the past anyway. Have any of you been impressed with your husband, wife, or partner's near photographic memory? Of our previous sins, which have been documented and will be shared with us in a repetitive and annoying way. Well, you know what? You can't change the past anyway. Now, everybody look up here. Look up here. Do your hands like this. Look at all the good faces in this room. Look at all these good faces. Now, everybody look up here again. Take a deep breath and go like this. Go, ah, do your hand this way. Ah. You see, whatever sins anybody in this room has committed up until this second in time, we're not going to fix them anyway. Rule one, no feedback about the past. Rule two is harder. You can't judge or critique ideas. In this exercise, people give you ideas. You can't say good idea, bad idea. I already knew that. That'll never work. No matter what people tell you, you must stand there, shut up, listen, take notes if you wish, and all you can say back is thank you. You're going to look at these ideas as a gift. If people give us a gift, should we say stinky gift, bad gift, I don't like your stupid gift? What should we say to the nice people? Give us a gift. Thank you. If you want to use the gift, use it. If you don't want to use the gift, put it in the closet. If you already have the gift, repackage it and give it to your mother-in-law. Just say thank you. So you're going to talk to as many people as you can talk to in about 3 or 4 minutes. You're going to say, my name is, I want to get better at. person's going to give you one or two quick ideas for the future, no feedback about the past. What if the person gives you the dumbest idea in the world? What do you say back?
Thank you.
Thank you. The other person says, my name is, I want to get better at it. Thank you. Whoever talks to the most people wins the prize. Stand up. Don't start with your partner. You now have 3 minutes. Go, 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 go. Okay. Stop. Stay where you are. Shh. Now, everyone look up here. I'm going to go like this. When I go like this, you will all shout out one word very loudly and simultaneously. This will be the first word that pops into your head. I'm going to begin a sentence. I'll leave out the last word. You think of a word. I go like this, you loudly shout out that word. This little exercise was great, positive, useful, helpful. What's the most common word I heard? Fun. What's the last word you think to describe any feedback activity? Fun. Has anyone ever called you on the phone and said, I have feedback I'd like to share with you. Please come into my office. And you said, fun, fun, fun. Fun is the last word you think of. Yet I've done this with tens of thousands of people from around the world. 95% say it's positive, useful, helpful, or fun. The answer to this question will help you become a better coach and have a happier life. Why? Remain standing. Join a group of 3, 4, or 5 people. If there's 6, break up into 2 groups of 3. Go! 3, 4, 5. Go, 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 go. Okay, stop. Stop, stop, stop. Raise your right hand in the air. Point your right index finger at the ceiling. Point. When I count to 3, point your spokesperson. 1, 2, 3, point. Okay, stop, stop. All right. Give me a list of reasons. I've done this exercise with tens of thousands of people from around the world. No matter what country I'm in, 95% of the people say it's positive, useful, helpful, great, or even fun. The answer to this question will help you be a better coach and have a happier life. Why? Your marks get set, 20 seconds. Why? Give me a list of reasons. Talk in your groups. Why? Why do people say it's fun? Why do people say the exercise is positive, useful, helpful, or fun? Why?
The exercise.
Yeah, we just did. Yeah, why? Stop. Give me the answer. I'll repeat it so everyone can hear it. Why do people say, raise your hand. Why do people say it's positive, useful, helpful, or fun? Spokesperson. Pushes you out of your comfort zone. Very good. Why? No expectation. You don't have to do it. Somebody gives you an idea. You think it's a dumb idea. On the inside, you're thinking, my, you are stupid. But on the outside, you just say thank you. You don't have to do it anyway, right? You got nothing to lose here. Okay, why? No judging. If I would have allowed you to judge or critique the comments, you would have spent twice as much time debating the value of the comments as listening to the comments. How much do we learn proving another person is wrong? Nothing. How much do we learn proving we're right? Nothing. What percent of all interpersonal communication time is wasted on that, according to the world? 65. Cut that out. Life is much more positive. One gentleman said, I listen better in this exercise than I almost ever did in my life. Ask him why. He said, normally when other people speak, I'm so busy composing my next comment to prove how smart I am. I am not listening, I'm just composing. The irony, he had a Nobel Prize. A man with a Nobel Prize in a management class trying to prove how smart he was. I said, look, you got one Nobel Prize, you ain't going to be winning two. Let's declare victory here. Well, a common misperception of coaching is I must have a deep knowledge of you to help you. Wrong. How many of you heard something interesting from somebody you don't even know? We don't have to know people to help people. Sometimes we learn more from those we don't know. They don't have baggage or history. Misconception 2, I have to be better than you or superior to you to help you, or you have to be more knowledgeable than me to help me. Wrong again. How many of you near the end of the exercise began to feel the need to say to other people in this room, I have your problem too. I have your problem too. What's amazing, it does not matter what country I'm in. Even though our cultures are different, in here, we're not that different in here. We're all working on the same kind of stuff in here. We're not really that different. We don't have to be better than others to help others. Make it two ways, not one way. You come to me and say, I want to get better at X, please help me. I say, I can get better too, please help me. You see how different that feels? Than one person going, you get better, you get better. I got nothing to change here. Let's just fix you. Well, we don't have to be better. And by the way, did any of you near the end of the exercise begin to hear in the back of your head a little voice going, eh, 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 eh,
excuse me, you know those good ideas you keep giving to the other people? Why don't you do any of them yourself?
Some of us heard that voice. Well, I don't have to be better than you to help you. Let's just be two humans stumbling around through life and try to help each other. And finally, what do you say to the good people in this room who just helped you?
Thank you.
Big round of applause for all these people that helped you. Okay, sit. Now, I'm going to wrap up with my favorite coaching exercise in the world. And then if you have questions for me?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'll answer any questions. What's my favorite coaching exercise in the world? Well, wait a minute. Before I do that, maybe I'll do the questions first. What's a good question?
We have one good question here, I thought. You've been doing this for a long time.
Yes.
How have your thoughts about leadership or how have they changed over time, or has the environment or things going on, technology things, has
well,
it changed?
Well, a couple comments. One, the role of a leader, especially a CEO, is becoming more and more and more visible and more difficult. Why? Everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got email access. Every leader I coach now, everything they say is public record. I was coaching Liz Smith, the president of Avon, who reported to Andrea Young. And Liz says to Andrea, does this coaching mean I have to watch what I say and how I act in every meeting for the rest of my career? Andrea says, welcome to my world. That's exactly what it means. If you're the leader, everyone's looking at your face, public access, people have tape recorders, they have cameras. Very, very important to be very sensitive to the way you look and act. One of my clients is the CEO of one of the world's largest companies. Great leader, had one bad habit. People talking, make sarcastic comments and roll his eyes. You know what I said? You can't do that anymore. You're the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world. I'm three levels below you. I make a presentation. You make a sarcastic comment and roll your eyes. You've killed my career. My career in this company is now over. You can't do that anymore. He's not a bad guy. He had no bad intentions at all. The reality is today it is very important for the leader to do that. And by the way, it's always been lonely at the top. Today it's lonelier. One of the things I love about what I do is I have all my clients help each other. They don't have anyone to talk to. Not because they're mean or selfish. They have no one to talk to because they have no one to talk to. They have to be incredibly sensitive about everything they say. So that is a change that's happened. Okay, another good question.
I think you ought to tell your story.
Okay, let me finish with my favorite exercise. I'm now going to give you the best coaching advice you're ever going to get in this or perhaps any other lifetime. Is everyone ready?
Ready.
Take a deep breath. I want you to imagine you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. You're on that deathbed. Here comes your last breath. But right before you take that breath, you're given a beautiful gift, a wonderful gift, the ability to go back in time, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person in this room, the ability to help this person be a better leader, much more important, the ability to help this person have a better life. What advice would the wise 95-year-old you, who knows what really mattered in life and what did not matter and what was important and what was not important, have for the you that's sitting here right now? You don't have to say anything or do anything or write anything. This one should answer two questions in your mind. Question number one is professional advice. That old person wants you to be a great leader or a professional. What advice would that person have for you? Number two, personal advice. That old person wants you to have a great life. What personal advice would that person have for you? Some friends of mine interviewed old folks who were dying, got to ask them this question. What advice would you have? On the personal side, theme number one could be summarized in three words. Be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not next year. Be happy now. The great Western disease, I'll be happy when. When I get the money, status, BMW, condominium. We all have the same when. That old person is when. A learning point from old people, I got so wrapped up looking at what I did not have, I could not see what I did have. I had everything. The people in this room, we are among the luckiest people who ever lived in the history of this planet. Don't get so wrapped up looking at what you don't have, you can't see that. Learning point number two, friends and family. Many of you work in wonderful companies and you should be proud of your companies. When you're 95 years old and you look around that deathbed, there ain't no employees waving goodbye. You start to realize these friends and family, they're kind of important. They're the only ones who seem to care today.
And learning point number three, if you have a dream, go for it. Because if you don't go for it when you're 35, you may not when you're 85. And it doesn't have to be a big one, maybe a little one. Go to New Zealand or speak Spanish or play a guitar. Other people may think your dream is goofy. Who cares? Not their dream, it's your dream. It's not their life, it's your life. Had a very embarrassing experience about a year ago. I was teaching this class and I said, go to New Zealand, speak Spanish. Guy raised his hand, he said, we're in Madrid, Spain, you fool. We all speak Spanish. Business advice isn't much different. Number one, have fun. Life is short. By the way, if you don't show enthusiasm and passion, why do you expect anybody else to? Number two is people. Do whatever you can to help people. The main reason to help people has nothing to do with money or status or getting ahead. The main reason to help people is much more important. The 95-year-old you will be proud of you because you did and disappointed if you don't. And if you do not believe this is true, you interview any CEO who's retired, and I've interviewed very many, and ask them a question. What are you proud of? So far, none of them told me how big their offices were. All they ever talked about is the people they helped. And final advice also the same. Go for it. The industry's changing. Your world's changing. You do what you think is right. You might not win. At least you tried. Old people almost never regret the risks they took and failed. They always regret the risks they failed to take. And the final thing I would like to say, it's been great fun for me to come back to Indiana. I had a wonderful time working with you today. Hope you found some of what I talked about to be helpful and useful and that you have a little bit better life. Thank you.
Thank you, Marshall, for taking the time to speak with us today. Speaking for myself, I know I learned something and had a lot of fun in the process. Today's presentation will be broadcast on WFYI, our media partner, Public Radio 90.1 FM on Monday, February the 4th at 1 in the afternoon. Please join us next month, Friday, February 22nd. We welcome Glenn Hubbard, the former chairman of the U.S. Council of Economic Advisors and the current dean of the Columbia University School of Business. Be sure to go online and order your tickets today. Information and tickets for each of the season's presenters and membership information can be found on the website, economicclubofindiana.org. Have a wonderful day, and we look forward to seeing you Friday, February 22nd. Thank you.
You've been listening to author Marshall Goldsmith, part of the 2012-2013 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Next month at this time, join us for Glenn Hubbard, Dean of the Columbia University School of Business. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sharon Allseth.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.